Sahanavavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahavaryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidavishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so now we're starting the next group of study. So the 7th, 8th, and 9th canto. So this on this side, the for the doctor of theology, then we see is that there's a progression then in the Bhagavatam. So these first six cantos then is analyzing, you could say, is like the aspect, like Samanya Bhakti, what makes bhakti, you know, special. What is bhakti as opposed to karma and jnana? Right? Then we have now in the second six cantos, now we're analyzing actually within devotional service, within pure devotional service, what are the qualifications, what are the qualities and all that. We understand? So the first six cantos is how to tell what is devotional service and what's not. And now it'll be what is the quality within devotional service. So basically you're studying the same thing, but the flavor is different. Because now it's, you know, this is more pure, this is a better status of pure devotion than this. Right? Well, the other one is, this is devotion, this is not. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's, it's very important to be able to tell that, because you're working on the same points, because you're always working on the Vedic principles, because these are coming from Krishna. Right? Devotion, in other words, everything that works is an aspect of devotional service. Right? Because if this is a if the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, in the spiritual world, there's only devotional service. There isn't something else. Right? There's no karma and jnana there. So we call something karma and jnana because the activities that generate results, right, in the devotional service, if it's seen without devotional service, that's called karma. And the knowledge of devotional service, the understandings that one has, if one sees those without devotional service, that's called jnana. Right? So that's why it's so important to be able to tell the difference between things. Otherwise, this whole thing of yukta vairagya and all these different things, one actually can't understand very well. You know, simple things, straightforward things, that works. But as you get into subtle things, that's where your difficulty will come up. Right? It means if you're in the temple program, you know, sitting down, chanting your japa, okay, that's doing. Okay, I'm sitting in a yogasana or something like that. Okay, that's yukta vairagya. That's very clear. The problem comes is when we're not engaged in the five direct activities of devotional service. That's where then it's difficult to tell the difference. Because any activity can be devotional service. Any knowledge can be devotional service. But also, at the same time, any activity can be not devotional service. Any knowledge can not be devotional service. And when it comes to the philosophy and technical points like the Vedanta, the Mayavadis know the same philosophy we do, but it's not devotional. And the Sahajiyas, they do all the same activities and the Goswamis that we do, but it's not devotional. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. And at the same time, anything that's working within the material platform, even though they'll claim, oh, this is Western, oh, this is that, what makes it work is Krishna. So that's the importance of the first six cantos, is to be able to tell the difference between what actually is devotional service and not. Like we see Prithu Maharaj, Rishabhdev Maharaj, so many of these, they're performing what we would call karmakanda yajnas. But because they see everything in connection to Krishna, you're saying, you know, Om Indraya Swaha, but the thing is who is the king? The king is Krishna. And the potency of Indra to perform his duties, he's just an arm of the universal form. So he just sees Krishna. His Brahmins, they're all, you know, smartas, they're all karmakandis. But he sees it in pure devotion. So you can say he came. Yeah, it was great. I came to class this morning.
I need points.
Yeah, I really appreciate the nodding of the head. You know, like that. Yes. Because it's very important. So many times is that, like, we're doing the yajnas. We're doing yajnas according to what Gopal Bhatta Goswami is given, authorized by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. Then we use the pratishtha, you know, the method of installing deities that was used at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur by his, you know, pundits and that. But devotees will say, oh, that's all karmakanda. But the point is karmakanda means activities that are fruitive. The same activity being done for Krishna is not fruitive. It's not karma. Does that make sense? Or somebody studies something from the Veda, they study astrology, they study Ayurveda and all this, and they'll say, oh, this is spiritual because it's from the Veda. But the point is unless it's connected to Krishna, it's just best quality mundane. So that's all it is that the spiritual world becomes reflected on the material world, in that it's reflected on that the ocean of desire. That's how Gita's explaining it. Because there's material desire, that then reflects the spiritual world. So the activities look the same. But now Krishna's not involved. So it becomes mundane. So technically there is no material world. There's only material consciousness. Right? So those with material consciousness are brought here. Right? Those without, they stay there. Does that make sense? Yes.
When we perform mixed devotional service,
yes,
even though the activity is supposed to be focused on, the consciousness is not there.
So you get a mixed benefit because, let's say, it means either from its recommended activities and you're following these recommended activities because that's what one should do in devotional service, that you're getting credit for that because you're doing the activity. Now, the consciousness may be thinking of so many other things. You know, what are we cooking for lunch today and this and that and so many different things like that. And you know, he's saying, you know, if I go to the market after the class, but the market opens at 8 and I get there at 9, will there be any good vegetables left? And this and blah, you know, the whole thing. Right? So then the point is that will have a mixed effect. But because you're following there, that's what's good. Because you're following what is authorized, what's recommended, though maybe the consciousness is not there, but you get credit for following that. Then the weakness will be the actual consciousness. Okay, now let's say we're doing our quote-unquote yukta vairagya, and we're taking non-recommended activities that are, you know, so important because this is what the what Westerners do, you know, and Westerners are so far superior to anything else in the universe, right? Of course, you know, and of Westerners, technically we mean Americans will accommodate Europeans, but actually we mean Americans. That's really what it means. You know, and we won't get into finer details, you know, that West Coast and of West Coast California and of California, Southern California, like that, you know, we won't get into that. So this kind of thing, then the difficulty comes up is that, okay, it's not a recommended activity. And now if you're conscious of Krishna when you do it, and your intent is to do that for Krishna, then you get benefit. But why have you chosen a non-recommended activity? If it's that's all that's available, then that's pure. But if this is what I prefer over something else, even though I could do the something else, but I don't want to do the something else, it's already mixed in the first place. Then if the consciousness is good, you're putting some good consciousness on mixed. What if you're thinking about the subji at 8 o'clock? You have nothing. Because you don't even have the activity that's recommended, so your consciousness has dropped, so you're not even doing devotional service, but you're not even doing a recommended, so you're just doing mundane stuff. But because you're trying to be a nice guy and this and that and use some decent qualities, it's pious. So yes, you're better than the average person because the average person is engaged in sin. In the way of that it's non-recommended, in the way it's a problem. But at the same time, because it's not connected to Krishna, it is sinful. Anyway. You know, it's gold chain sinful instead of iron chain sinful. So that's why we're very careful that if we can follow what's recommended, we do. And if we can't, we don't. You know, like you're traveling, you know, in the West, you know, like that, you know, even if you're traveling here, you know, you go into the bathrooms, right? You know, you don't take your shoes off and wash your feet and stuff like that. You know, they're too funky. You leave your shoes on. When you get back to wherever you're from, the house, the temple, then you go and wash and everything. So that's as good as it gets, because if you take your shoes off, God only knows what you get, so better leave your shoes on. Does that make sense? You know? So you're doing your best. So you're trying to maintain the best you can. So that's going to happen. That's Yukta Vairagya. But if it's just, oh, this is my preference, and opposed to something that could be done, but I prefer not to, simply based on bodily concept of life. Because nowadays it's considered glorious. Oh, we're Westerners, you know, we're just being practical. That's totally the bodily concept of life. Right? That was Jarabharat's whole point with Maharaj Rahugana. Is that you think you're the king, you think I'm the servant, therefore you're bossing me around. But actually, who is master, who is servant, since everybody's controlled by the modes? So actually, we're all servants, and the modes of nature is the master. And who's the master of the modes of nature? That's Krishna. Therefore, Krishna's master, everyone else's servant. You understand? So, therefore, in this, we will, because it's a continuation here, that we're naturally going to be basing these points on here, but being able to tell the difference that this is what is recommended, devotional service is there, now how will we improve the consciousness? All right? As opposed to what actually is devotion and what's not. So in other words, the first six cantas are more on don't forget Krishna, and the second six are more on always remember Krishna. But it's the same principle, whichever way you're looking at it. The knowledge is the same. It's just the flavor of it. Does that make something? So that's the difference in this. Because otherwise, it's not just first six cantos, last six cantos, just because, you know, okay, six and six, you know, it's balanced, and so that way we... No, it's a matter of there's actually a difference in the mood. There's a progression. So now it's a matter within devotional service, being prepared so that we're able to appreciate when we get to the 10th canto. Right? Does that make sense? Good? Yeah? Okay. So then, table of contents, we have chapter 1, the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. Chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu, king of the demons. Chapter 3, Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. Chapter 4, Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe. Chapter 5, Prahlad Maharaj, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. Chapter 6, Prahlad instructs his demoniac schoolmates. Chapter 7, what Prahlad learned in the womb. Chapter 8, Lord Narsingadev slays the king of the demons. Chapter 9, Prahlad pacifies Lord Narsingadev with prayers. In chapter 10, Prahlad, the best amongst exalted devotees. Okay, preface by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Offering obeisances to Guru and Krishna, the ocean of mercy, I take shelter of Sri Sukadev, the eye of the universe, and master of the worlds. Right? The eye of the universe, because through what Sukadev Goswami is giving here in the Bhagavatam, you can actually see the whole universe. Without him, you don't actually see. Right? People think they see, but they don't actually see. Right? When seeing is how it connects to Krishna. That's the real thing. Right? As you were saying, the reflection is there. That means what you're reflecting is everything in connection to Krishna. So all it is that it's designed so that one can act in such a way that one is not thinking of Krishna. But the activities you're going to do, if you want to get a result, have to still be the same. Right? Mother Jashoda takes a pot, puts it on the fire, puts things in the pot, and pushes them around. She ends up with something cooked. You want something cooked here, you have to do the same thing. The difference is she's doing it to please Krishna. Here, we do it to please ourselves. That's the difference. So we're learning the consciousness how to do that for Krishna. But the activity doesn't change. You can't say, oh, you know, this is the modern, we just take the eggplant and just toss it up in the air and hold out the plate, and when it lands on the plate, it's perfectly cooked. Right? You know, some guy sitting in his French cafe, you know, came up with this when, you know, instead of getting, you know, his double espresso, they made a mistake and put 8 in there. And then he came up with this philosophy. Right? So it doesn't work. So the point is no matter what you say, unless you use the techniques used in the spiritual world, you do not get any results in the material world. Say what you like. If you analyze it carefully, that's all that works. Right? So the mechanics are the same. The results you get from the mechanics are the same. Right? Of there is unlimitedly better and the quality is better, but the point is the principle is the same. The main difference is the consciousness. So unless one can see this, like if you bring this up right in the beginning, I mean very, very beginning, you could explain it to somebody, it would work. But otherwise, a little bit after the beginning, this won't work so well for them. Right? Because the difficulty is no, I do this activity. I cook non-vegetarian things. That's material. I cook vegetarian. That's spiritual. So the problem comes is that vegetarian becomes spiritual. Now, why are they cooking vegetarian? Because it's for Krishna. So it is spiritual. But nowadays you have things, it's just, you know, getting into this diet and that diet, I went on the internet, I found something new and this and that, and this is the rage, this is the fad. All these things, even though it's technically vegetarian, but it's not spiritual. Unless you connect the consciousness. You understand? So in the beginning, they're changing the activity. So this activity is spiritual, that activity is material. So this point to being able to point out is that, no, anything that works, that is a reflection of the spiritual world, but it's only spiritual if the consciousness is connected to Krishna. Does this make sense? So that's the question? No. Just everyone has their, how you say, tell. So that's not his. Okay. Okay? Is that clear? So that's the whole point, is that that's why we say is that things that are successful, it have to be based on what they do, what we recommend. That's why the followers of the Vedas, they are successful. Right? Everybody comes to India to get wealth. Right? People may have gone to Europe to get land, but that's because they were, you know, pressing circumstances, then they needed to leave India, right? Because Parasaram was making a tour and he was good, so then they had to leave, right? And after, you know, moving around in Central Asia for a while, then getting very tired of, you know, perfect melons and all that, they decided to head into Europe where it's freezing cold and you only have wild boars to eat. Right, you know, why they would do that, I have no idea, but maybe it got crowded, or, you know, Genghis G was, you know, having too much fun, I don't know, but whatever. Then they head off to Europe. But the point is, but once they establish themselves in Europe, then they come back to India to get wealth. Is it? So that's the point, is the followers of the Vedas, it's always prosperous. But the problem is then, because we are so conditioned to seeing the secondary aspects, the external, not the primary. Right? Because the primary is pleasing Krishna. The secondary is the activities that are used to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So, because of that, we'll look at here, these are the activities. And okay, they're Vedic. But the difference between material and spiritual is consciousness, that's hard to tell. Like Prabhupada asking that big Indian scholar, what's the supreme? Who's the supreme? Oh, that's a very difficult question. Prabhupada turns to the 8-year-old kid, says, who's the supreme? Says, Krishna. Then Prabhupada turns back to the scholar. What was so difficult about that? You understand? So that's the thing in the material world. Consciousness is the big problem. You know, it's been a tiring day, long day, going to the kitchen, just want to cook something to eat, just eat. Then having to think about Krishna, you have to, that's so much strain, you know, the consciousness, it's so much energy. So not so much interesting. Does this make sense? So that's the whole point, is that we're not used to it. Even though it's the simplest thing. Right? In the spiritual world, everything is conscious. That means everything is alive. For little kids, is everything alive? All their toys. Right? If the toy doesn't have a face on it, it's like, where's the face? You know, it has eyes. Where's the mouth? So for them, the concept that everything's, you know, personal and everything's, you know, conscious, that's not a problem for them. So it's a natural way of looking at things. And then as one gets older, one gets the natural, you know, sophisticated, you know, modern skepticism that makes, you know, nothing personal of, you know, any value, because it doesn't exist like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So Sukadeva Goswami, he's the eye of the universe, because from his view of what he's explained here in Bhagavatam, we can see everything in connection to Krishna. Right? That's what's important. Techniques and other things aren't given in Bhagavatam. Some points are there, devotional techniques. But actually, how to do the yajna, how he's dressing as a king, how he's dealing with his duties as a king. All the, that's not explained. Because that's all in Mahabharata, that's in Arthashastra, that's in Dharmashastra, that's there. So that knowledge is already available. But one only sees the duty of kings, only sees the duty of Brahmins, only sees the money, only sees like that. But with this vision, then you can see the universe. And the actual universe is Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why this is so important. and master of the worlds. Because if you understand this consciousness, then you are actually master of the world, because the modes of nature, dharma, arta, kama, moksha, are one's servant. Not that devotees looking for that, but it's just by nature that's one's position. Yes. Yes, you could say like that. Like that. But at the same time is that, you know, Brahma's the original, like this. But point is being here, because this Bhagavatam, is that through what he's given, you can actually see. Because that's the most important. Does that make sense? Yeah. I offer myself and everything I possess to Krishna, who is the life of the gopis and the controller, for service to his devotees. Right? So Krishna controls the devotees for service. He's not controlling for himself. Because devotees, he wants to see devotees happy. Devotees are happy when they're engaged in service. Right? Yes. Two types of uti, inclination, are described in the seventh canto. Inauspicious, arising from anger of the devotees, and auspicious, arising from the mercy of the devotees. This canto also glorifies devotees of three types: Shuddha Bhaktas, persons having bhakti mixed with a little jnana or karma, karma misra bhaktas, jnana misra bhaktas, and persons having jnana mixed with a little bhakti. The inclinations of Hiranyakashipu, which were inauspicious, were inborn. The cause was the ancient anger of the Kumaras. The inclination for pure bhakti of Prahlad, his son, which was very auspicious, arose from accepting mercy from Narada's feet. That bhakti, which appears within the devotees, gave rise to the Lord's mercy upon him and protected him from the king. That creeper of bhakti, growing in a great field composed of humility, respect, and other qualities, is nourished by the devotees by watering it through hearing and chanting, right? Because we always hear hearing and chanting is what is there. But the field that is growing in is all these nice qualities of the devotees. Because that's how it manifests, right? It means you have a field, there's a manifestation of a plant, right? It's manifesting those qualities, it's built on those, the plant's made of those qualities of the earth. Right? But what's important is the plant. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, you're hungry and I hand you a handful of dirt, not going to work very good. I could say all the vitamins and minerals are there and, you know, go on and on how great it is, and but it's not going to work. So the real taste is from bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? Because we understand it's a descending process. Why this importance of descending? Because scientifically we'll say it's ascending. You have the earth, and then from the earth, and then you get the plant, and then from the plant you get the fruit. So like that, then the earth is the foundation. But because it's Krishna as the Ichha Shakti, that's the foundation. Does that make sense? So Ichha is the important principle. Then from that, to get a desire, to fulfill the desire, then you require an activity, right? And that activity has to have an environment, you know, and technical mechanics on which it is based. Does that make sense? So that's why then we see it goes down from there. So that the creeper is growing on these are the qualities in which it's made from, but it's actually the fruit of this creeper that's the most important. Then there's the creeper, and then that's based on that. So in other words, you can see all those good qualities and all that, that's your jnana shakti, because that's your attitude, right? If I say, he's humble, it's an attitude, right? So that's in sambandha. Right? Then you're going to perform the activity, you know, you're going to use the mechanics of sankarshan in the activity, and you're going to use the qualities or attitude in the activity. You understand? So in other words, the position of Shankarshan and Prajumna, these are what are being used to perform an activity in Vasudeva. But just because you're doing an activity, it's not enough. Right? If we have a guy in the office, he's doing his work properly. But he has no idea what the work is for. He just does his work by someone who's higher up in the food chain. Will they consider he's very developed? No. He's a good worker, but he's not very developed. So what makes him? Because he knows what it's for. Right? Why are the board of directors on top? They know what it's for. Right? And even though they may not be doing the activity, because they know what it's for, that's the highest. So then Vasudeva means I'm using the knowledge of Shankarshan, the attitude of Prajumna, with the understanding of the goal of Aniruddha. That being combined together, that's what makes Vasudeva work. Is that clear? For now. Okay. Does that make sense? So that's what makes the thing function. Yes? So that's why you see here is that we see the attitude of the devotee, that mercy being or that anger being, it gives a result because then the activity carries that flavor. Is that? Yeah. Okay. The topic of 10 chapters is pure bhakti. 5 chapters show how bhakti attained through a guru of similar bhakti is a minor element of karma ajnana or a major element within a mixture of karma ajnana in order to attain one's respective goals. These processes gradually become the states of prema from pure bhakti, shanta bhakti from mixed bhakti, and liberation, jnana with a little bit of bhakti. These are topics of the chapters of the second canto. Right? So we see as we're analyzing within bhakti, right? Before we're analyzing what's not bhakti. Okay, this is the part that's mixed. Right? Here's bhakti, here's what's mixed. Now we're looking at, okay, here's bhakti. But now here's this is mixed bhakti. This will move forward. But why will it move forward? Because you understand what is mixed. So you're trying to control that and trying to enhance. You know, like you're developing the bhakti and trying to reduce the mix. Yes?
This way, when something about the liberation, can we say that this is actually what it becomes?
That's one of the things. In other words, jnana with a little bhakti, then this becomes shanta. Yeah, and then the karma, then that will become, you know, lower states of bhakti. Just like, let's say, even though it's pure bhakti, within Vaikuntha, then is there a desire for liberation? Not Sayuja, but the other four. And why?
In Vaikuntha.
They still desire? Yes, but it's spiritual, so it's pure devotion. But the whole point is Bhagavatam, why are we looking at it this way? Because normally when we talk about pure devotion, we're talking about that's what we're trying to get to. But when we say pure devotion, we technically mean pure, unalloyed devotion. That's what makes Braja Bhakti different from majesty. Because majesty, there's still the aspect I'm worshiping God. And by worshiping God, this is really nice. You understand? So, because when you're worshipping in sweetness, it's about pleasing Krishna. So whether your situation is nice or not, that doesn't matter. If, by your endeavor, Krishna is pleased, one is happy. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let us say you have a situation where you have the parent and you have the child, and a situation that the child will be comfortable might technically make the parent uncomfortable, like sitting over in the corner, this, that. But the parent doesn't. But it's not a problem. Because why? Because the child's happy. That discomfiture is not a problem. You understand? That's the difference between sweetness and majesty. Because majesty is then it comes in and says, everybody's happy. It works out. God's happy with everybody. You know, it all works out nicely. So not that it doesn't work out in sweetness, but the point is because sweetness will take that, there's that taste there, and then it'll go the other way. But how do you appreciate the greatness of sweetness unless you see it? Does that make sense? Kaliya serpent, he's come into this place. The cows go in, they see the poison, they run out. Right? Cowherd boys drink it, the cows drink it, they die. But when Krishna's in Kaliya Nag, Mother Yashoda just runs straight into the water. Does that make sense? That's sweetness. That's not majesty. So because of that, even though it's a difficulty and it's a danger, it's brought out. Then you have the other times where Mother Yashoda is tying Krishna up. Right? Do you hear of any pastime in Vaikuntha where anybody's tying up Vishnu? No, never. It just doesn't happen. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that that's the position. He is God. So that's why Mother Yashoda can't tie him. But because of the love, then she conquers him, she can tie him. Otherwise, how do you tie a rope, no matter how long it is, around unlimited? Because even to get an unlimited rope, unlimited is getting bigger all the time. So unless the rope is unlimitedly getting bigger, but then that means it's Krishna's potency. So that, how is that, you know, it's not going to happen. So he's tied by this. So that's the thing, that's sweetness. So that's then where we're looking in here. Because we're looking here is that it's the same thing, is that karma misra or jnana misra bhakti is better than no bhakti. But it's not as good as pure bhakti. But now the intent, now here we're talking pure bhakti, but now we're talking about karma misra and jnana misra, means a little mixed. So basically we're talking here about the Madhyama platform. Is that the intent is pure, that's why we call it classified as pure. The Madhyama is called a pure devotee, even though there's still some karma and jnana mixed. Because it's the prominence. Right? It's already come to, you know, 60-75%, and as it goes it gets more and more. Right? Does that make sense? So if we're taking nishta as you know, nicely, how you say, nishta of nishta, then that's 75%. So then ruchi is going to be higher than that, asakti is going to be higher. It's just a little bit. Right? Because it's the major. While the neophyte, then will, there we're calking it karma misra. That will be looked at in a light that it's not as ideal. Because the karma is the more prominent. Right? Karma is more prominent. Though it's bhakti, but there's a majority of karma. Right? And that's differentiated between where you have karma and it's, and there's, you mix a little bhakti with that, or jnana and mix a little bhakti with that. In fact, in here they just dropped the karma misra. They're dealing with jnana that has some misra. Because that, you know, we dealt with that before. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. And then hopefully the pure amyloid.
Yes.
Some other living entities, they might grow in the same way, but get to the content, because that's their max. That's what they
yes.
want.
Yes. But that's what they want. But we don't. The point is it's by association. You associate with those who are interested in Braja Bhakti, then the natural tendency is towards that. But if one's a Vaikuntha Wala, then you're going to go there anyway. You know, it's like, who is that devotee? Murari Gupta, I think. You know, then Lord Chaitanya is trying to get him to Radha Krishna. He tried, but he just couldn't do it. You know, and he was clear like that. But the point is by following the path that's given a Braja Bhakti, you know, Lord Chaitanya gives. By following a Chinta Beta Beta Tattva, even if you're interested in Vaikuntha, you'll get there a lot quicker. So the path, that means that the path given by Lord Chaitanya is the most, efficacious method of bhakti that there is. Like that. You can follow what Ramanuja Madhva gives, and it'll work. It's bona fide. But if you follow what Lord Chaitanya gives, it'll be quicker. Okay. Where is this going? Huh? Oh, I see. Everyone's just Pedro. kind of wondering in class, is the teacher going to see this? Am I going to get in trouble?
Huh?
Oh, Rajabhati, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. No, you have to take fingerprints after. That's how you're going to get off of this one. Yeah, otherwise try it during the break. So, then, yes. So, all we're differentiating is so that there is a progression. In other words, if there's any bhakti included, it will be a benefit. Even if it's bhakti Mr. Karma, they'll get more out of their karma than if they don't have bhakti mixed. But if you want pure devotional service, then you kind of have to turn it around. So a neophyte devotee, even though he just joins, that will be karma Mr. Bhakti, but the majority will be karma. But their intent is bhakti. So therefore, that's how you can have a third class pure devotee. Because even though there may be so much of the karma, that their intent is just to do it for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Let's say somebody just met the devotees, just impressed, you know, went to the program, learned about chanting, learned about prasad. That's all they know about devotional service. They don't know anything else. They're still going to stay up late, watch their movie. They're going to get up late. They're going to go in the kitchen, cook whatever they're cooking. But the point is they're going to offer it, and they're going to chant their rounds. Right? So at this stage, and they're only interested in Krishna consciousness. Everything else they're just not interested in. Right? They're just doing things out of habit and what they do. Right? So they're actually third-class pure devotees. So now if they can maintain that, then they'll move very quickly. But if they start to distinguish, oh, I prefer doing this and do that, so, oh, you know, because I'm Western and therefore this or that, then that's when the problem starts. That will slow down. You know, therefore, there's going to be, oh, I was so much more enthusiastic before and this and that. You know, no, it's just about, it can continue. Same time as Krishna does give that special taste to inspire. But it can, if one is interested, that can continue. Does that make sense? So in other words, if the intent is correct, we look at it in Mr. Bhakti in a positive light. The intent has a problem, we look at it in the negative. You understand? In other words, we look at it, this is going to make you forget Krishna. But if it's in positive, this will make you remember Krishna. Right? So that's why we see, it appears, you know, you have so many examples of grihastha life. And some of them are talking about how they're great in the Paramahamsas and this and that. And, you know, it's like, what is it? These kings, they're doing all these yajnas, and he has 10 sons and all these different things. So, you know, that they, how you say, he didn't get the kids out of a Cracker Jacks box, right? You know, like that, you know? So the point is, but we're talking about the pure devotion. But at other times, we're talking about someone following the same rules and regulations, and they're, you know, total griyamedi. You know, the forest of material enjoyment, and these, they're following the Vedic rules perfectly, but the griyamedis. Because it's not about bhakti. Does that make sense? So here is that the distinguishing about who has these things in them, and how these are positively moving forward. In other words, how the bhakti element is driving this bhakti misra, karma misra, or jnana misra. Right? It's the bhakti that's prominent. Because the karma and jnana are less, so therefore it moves forward nicely. But the focus has to be on the bhakti. Right? It's a mistake to put it on the misra part. Means it's not that they don't see the different backgrounds. It's just like this. Okay, now of Prahlad Maharaj, all the demigods are there, top to bottom, right? Now of all those demigods that are there, which of those demigods ever sits on Vishnu's lap? Lakshmi. Okay? And is she sitting? No. Right? because she doesn't understand this form and the mood and that, so she's a little wary, right? Now, who else can sit on anybody's lap? You know them, don't know them, anything. Kids. Right? And now, let's say the wife is close to the husband, moods are considered. But for children, if the child is in a happy mood, even if the parent's grumpy, what should the parent be doing? Adjusting the mood and being happy. You understand? Therefore, then Prahlad is going forward and sitting on Nrisimhadeva's lap. So it is a consideration of all these elements of rasa, but we have to understand is all the technical points are only to support rasa. We say, oh, we're just trying to get this result, but if that result is not supporting relationships, then what's the point? Right? Does that make sense? Some time is in we'll do some management thing. It's efficient. It gets the result done. Same time, it annoys everybody. So is it actually a good result? No, because we're following ascending process. And so ascending process never gets to relationship. You understand? Think about it. What the you could say your typical community, which is so founded in science and mechanics and knowledge and applying that to get specific scientific results. How good is that community in relationships? They're famous for being totally dysfunctional. And the better they are at it, the more dysfunctional they are. I mean, literally. They can't even relate. You understand? So the point is, if you use the ascending process, you'll never actually get there. So only the descending process is there. So if you just use the ascending without bhakti, then you'll get impersonalism. If you use the descending without bhakti, you'll get sahajyas. So that's why then the balance is there. You have to use the proper knowledge and activities of devotional service as recommended. That gets the balance. Does that work? Does that make distinction there? Yeah, so in other words, this is the new topic. So in other words, if it doesn't make sense, don't worry about it. That's what the study is for. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is introducing that this is what's happening. Like that. So before we've analyzed this is bhakti, this is not, now we're going to do that same analysis within bhakti. So we understand, you know, this aspect of mixed is favorable, this aspect of mixed is not. Right? Well, before it's just, the mixed part is what's unfavorable. So we're trying to get that pure devotion is the thing. Otherwise we get too attached to the mixed part. Right? As what's his name is pointing out? Who is discussing that? Bharat Maharaj was discussing that you're using the techniques within devotional service to please the Lord, but at some point you have to give up the attachment to those techniques. Doesn't mean you don't use them, but you give up the attachment to them. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, for example, the sannyasi uses detachment in Krishna's service, while the grihastha is using attachment in Krishna's service. But the tendency is the sannyasi is attached to detachment, and the grihastha is attached to attachment. But at some point we have to give up that attachment, and it has to be just for Krishna. We're in that situation, that's why we use it. Right? One's in the household situation, you use that facility. One is in the brahmachari sannyasa, you use that facility. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. Right? You know, in other words, the brahmachari, he has nothing. So when he travels, He likes that. He's attached to having nothing. And it works fine. Unless he travels with a grihastha. And then the grihastha's in ecstasy because, hey, here's an extra, 30 kilos. The brahmachari doesn't like this because he's attached to having nothing. And now he has to take this bag along with him and this and that. And he's grumpy. So he has to learn to, it's for Krishna. At the same time, his grihastha is attached to that more things, but he has to learn to, that's not, because it disturbs the devotees. It's not. So in the same point, they're both engaged in Krishna's service, but at the same time, each one learns how not to be attached to their attachment. Does this make sense? So that was Bharat Maharaj's instructions, right? So then now we'll see this being applied. He's Prahlad Maharaj, he's a child, he's in the demon families, he's doing that, but he engages everything in Krishna's service. Right? So yeah. Okay. Chapter 1. The Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. Pratigya. The Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. It's the Vishaya. How then did he become partial like a common man for the sake of Indra and thus kill Indra's enemies? 771. Shamshaya. Right? So this is the doubt. Okay, if he's equal to everyone, but then why is he killing the demons? Because if you're equal to everyone, then you are killing the demons and the devotees, or you're not killing the devotees and you're not killing the demons. But why is he always nice to the devotees and killing the demons? Right? So that's the doubt, because we're saying he's equal, but then he's saying, but here's an example, he's not. Yes? Remember is that depending upon where it, how it comes, the means you have the two set. I'm not sure that I don't remember which is which, but you have two sets of names: the ones that Vyasadeva's names and then Gotama's names. Probably generally tends to use Gotama's, but since we're going to be dealing with Vedanta Sutra, we're going to get used to Vyasa's terms, right? They mean the same thing. Now, in it that you're coming up, you have your reasons, but it can be that the doubt comes up earlier. The second position is you're giving your reason. See, it's like this. The first one is thesis. Both of them are going. That's going to stick for both. Yes. So,
Pararta Animan and Svartha Animan. For one's benefit or for others.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Does that make it? Say it again.
Pararta
Animan and
Svartha
Animan. Pararta means for others.
Yeah.
And Svartha means for yourself. Right. So, in other words, you're giving the example, you're explaining it to others, or it's for understanding of yourself, right? Now, let's say I'm discussing it in general. Let's say if you're dealing with devotees, you're going to make your point, then you're going to explain it, right? And generally, then you'll give examples. And during examples, maybe some doubt will come up, so you give different examples from different angles, right? Then you're going to bring all that together, and then you're going to show that, therefore, the original point, that conclusion, is there, right? Now let's say you're dealing with something that's more of an issue. So then, when I make the point, you can't start unless you've made your point. But then, in my reasons, the person's doubt comes up. So the doubt becomes the prominent aspect of the second. So it can either be, the second part can either be reason, or it can be doubt. Does that make sense? In other words, doubt either comes up prominently in the second, so therefore then your third part is going to be trying to clear the doubt, because that's the main thing on the floor, or it's going to be while explaining the third part and the examples, doubts may come up, just in minor. So in other words, if there's more of a misunderstanding, then the doubt takes the prominence in the logic. And if there's not, then it doesn't. Yes. Huh? Yeah, Purvapaksha means now they've had their doubt, now they make their thesis and reason. Okay. Counter, yes.
Uttaram is alternate viewpoint.
And uttara is an alternative viewpoint. It means ours. In other words, it's the same thing. It's just bringing up, okay, we said the doubt, but we haven't discussed that. Now, the doubt then has its explanation. So the doubt has its own theory, has its own reason, and has its own explanation. Right? So the doubt will be the shamshaya, the purva will be the explanation of their doubt and their reasons. But generally we don't break it down as much. Right? It's just, we'll just say the purva paksha. That will include their reasons and their examples. While in the main, who's the main speaker, then we'll break it down to reasons and examples as two separate things. Right? Does that make sense? So depending upon how it flows, in other words, we have all these different ways to explain the same thing of the five levels. Depending on what's prominent, how it comes up, then we'll be using the different terms and different forms. But it still will fall into these same categories. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because of the...
It's basically sambandha vidhe prayatna. First two are sambandha, second two are vidhe, and the last one is prayatna.
Oh, okay.
Nirnaya is conclusion.
Nirnaya would be, yeah, conclusion. Nirnaya, and the other is Siddhanta, I think.
Nigaman.
Nigaman, Nirnaya. Sorry? Yes, so that will go back to the first one. That will be connected to the first. Maybe you should make a chart of how all these things do and so everyone can kind of look at it. Huh?
We're covering it in the afternoon.
Oh, okay. Yes, okay. Because the afternoon is a study just in this. No, this came out here. I would say it's for now. If we like, we can run like that. It depends, unless we find our brain is too much of a mush in the afternoon. And we'll put it down in the morning. But the idea was this: the second, the parallel class is more technical, so it's better in the morning. And the others like that. Plus, then, when it gets to all these technical things, Vedanta Sutra, you know, you're not going to have too much, questions come up on issues and management and all that, so we won't get distracted. You know, and generally, most those who come extra come in the morning, who ask those questions. So then the idea was, if we switch them, then we'll solve that problem. Basically, for the next month, we won't have a problem, but Kartik and festival, generally, those two times, we end up with too much of this problem. Well, at least for today. We'll try it and then see how it works, you know, Vedanta Sutra. If it works nice in the afternoon, we'll leave it. Okay. So, here's then the Purva Paksha. In Bhagavad Gita 9:29, the Lord says, Samoham Sarabhuteshu, Name Dveshostina Priya. I am equal to everyone. No one is dear to me, nor is anyone my enemy. In the previous canto, however, it has been observed that the Lord sided with Indra by killing the demons on his account. Therefore, the Lord was clearly partial to Indra, although he is the super soul in everyone's heart. Right? So, in other words, the doubt is that he's done this, and now here's his explanation. Does that make sense? So, do you see the parallel there? Okay. Is everyone catching this? You have your point, then you have your reason. Now, the doubt can also have its reason. So, all it is in here, then we're following that line. It's that we've made the point, and now here's that's coming there. So, it's just a matter of, if there's a doubt or not. So some chapters you see it's a more of an issue, like the demons, this point of Krishna being equal, this is a real issue for them, you know, because they're always ending up on the, you know, the how you say, you know, they're coming up short in this. Yeah, the rough end of the stick, yeah. Okay, now the uttara. Yes. Yes. Doubt, reasons, examples, it'll just all come at once because that's there. Means from the, in other words, you have those who's presenting and you have those who are opposing. Presentation, you'll give your point, you'll give your reasons, you'll give your examples, then you'll bring that all together and then make your point again. It's very simple. But if there's a doubt in there, then it means it's a debate. So you make your point, as soon as you bring up your reason, then immediately the doubt comes in. Right? And then the doubt coming in, they're naturally going to go on to their reasons and everything. Then you have to, then you counter from there. So the third point where you're giving your examples is actually the counter to any doubts. So either there is a doubt, or you're addressing possible doubts. Like you see sometimes Prabhupada in the purport will say, some may say. No one said anything, but it might be a doubt, it might come up, therefore it's addressed in the third part. So it's natural that they give all their things, then you'll move to the third part. So the third part is always going to be the same. But it's a matter of whether you're clearing direct doubts that are obvious, or you're clearing possible doubts that might come up, depending upon your audience. Does that work? Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is always transcendental to material qualities, and therefore he is called nirguna, or without qualities. Because he is unborn, he does not have a material body to be subjected to attachment and hatred. 716, Uttara. Therefore, right, so now he's going to make these things. By enmity or by devotional service, by fear, by affection, or by lusty desire, by all of these or by any one of them, if a conditioned soul somehow or another concentrates his mind upon the Lord, the result is the same. For the Lord, because of his blissful position, is never affected by enmity or friendship. 7.1.26. That's the mutant. Okay. So because he's transcendental, he's not affected. We're affected. We'll say, oh, this is not balanced. But for him, he's just reciprocating with you how you deal with him. You're inimical towards him. He reciprocates. You're not inimical. He different. So in other words, what happens? Anybody who's there all comes to the transcendental position. Right? The demons who approach Krishna inimically, they get liberation. And the devotees, they're liberated from the material condition. The difference being, because they approach with love, they also get that. He reciprocates that aspect. But otherwise, as far as karma and jnana, which is all the people are interested in the material world, results the same. But if you want to go back to Godhead, that's another thing. Okay, chapter 1 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikit asked Sukadeva Goswami, question 7.1 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 7.1 in verse 7.1. Works out nice here. King Parikit inquired, my dear Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, is equal and extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial like a common man for the sake of Indra and thus kill Indra's enemies? How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical towards others? Lord Vishnu himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the reservoir of all pleasure. Therefore, what benefit would he derive from siding with the demigods? Right, means he, what benefit, he's already transcendental, he's already happy, so why side with the demigods? What more will he get? Right? What interest would he fulfill in this way? Since the Lord is transcendental, why should he fear the asuras? And how could he be envious of them? O greatly fortunate and learned Brahmana, whether Narayana is partial or impartial has become a subject of great doubt. Kindly dispel my doubt with positive evidence that Narayana is always neutral and equal to everyone. So here's a proper also doubt, is that the doubt is there. The point has been made, so we don't doubt the point, but we don't understand the point. So please make it clear so I understand the point. This is very different from the atheistic approach where I just oppose it. Oh, it's not right. Right? Oh, the Veda says this, but, you know, in the West, you know, we have different scientific evidence, so therefore it can't be right. No, but here it is. There's a doubt comes up because of something. Please make it clear so that the actual Vedic conclusion is understood. This is the difference. That's the difference between a theistic discussion and technically an atheistic. So if you oppose the Vedic version, it's actually atheistic. We support it, but don't understand it, but want to understand it, that's theistic. Right? And then when it's devotional, then that's the best. Yes?
Those two are devotional, and the atheist is doubt.
In either case, there's a doubt, so we don't see the transcendental aspect, because that's what can solve the problem of either of them, right? So it's just, in other words, the mechanics we don't understand. But the point is since it's about devotion, because we take mechanics as the main thing, right? But if it's about devotion and a relationship and all, that's the main thing. The point is what kind of relationship do the demons have with Krishna? And what kind does the devotees have? So therefore, the demons don't turn to the Lord for protection, while the devotees do. So he's reciprocating that, and he's protecting the devotees. Right? While the demons surrender to Krishna, you know, as we do see Bali Maharaj and others do, then he protects them.
So can you say that the devotee's mind actually took doubt about the Lord's arise?
It may arise, but they want it to be cleared so that it won't be there. In other words, the mind is very tricky. That's why it says before, who was saying, don't trust the mind. There was also Bharat Maharaj, wasn't it? Yeah. Bharat or Rishabdev? Yes, Rishabdev. So Rishabdev, you're saying don't trust the mind. It means that, in other words, we work with the mind, and as the mind becomes purified, it will become more friendly. But we still never trust it, right? In other words, like you have friends that are friendly and you interact, but you don't necessarily trust, you know, for intimate things. And then you have those that are more intimate, then you trust there. So the mind never gets to the point where you trust it intimately, not while one's conditioned. In the spiritual world, yes, but here, no. So, does that make sense? So the mind can come up with something stupid. Right, that's its business. So the mind has been, choosing, accepting and rejecting based on karma and jnana and the results of them since time immemorial. So that's all it actually knows how to do. So you can gradually make it choose, you know, it starts to see the benefits of the taste in Krishna consciousness. And so therefore it starts to choose that. But you can't trust it because this is working in this situation, and okay, I'm comparing this material situation to this spiritual situation. The spiritual is better in all this, but let's say I haven't compared in this other area. So an opportunity comes up in this other area, the mind may take it, because just out of habit, it goes for that. That's why it can't be fully trusted. It's not that you don't work with it, and it's working nicely, but you never fully trust it. Because when it comes up, oh, hey, let's get into this, we don't think, oh, the mind's doing fine here and it'll do fine there. No. It can't be trusted. Because it'll just then from there just go into sense gratification. Because that's the point, is that one's seen as the happiness from spiritual is greater than the happiness from the material in these areas. So it's choosing the spiritual, and that way it's a friend. But in this other area, we haven't compared it or don't have experience. So therefore, all it knows is sense gratification. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. 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 Yeah. But the difficulty comes up because you can't discern it's actually the mode of passion. That's why those who like to argue are considered in the mode of passion. Even though they're brahminical and they're arguing on shastra and do it properly, it's still considered passion. That's why those who are more into debate and everything generally end up with kings. They end up in their court because that's where debates and stuff go on. You know, kings appreciate it, others like that. So that's the place, like that. So that comes up there. So yes. Yeah. So yes, that's a good point. Is that clear on that? Yeah. Yes. No, but they're not wanting to argue. They'd rather just explain what is Krishna consciousness, how to practice. This is how you chant your rounds. You chant 16 every day, follow the Mahalik principles, hold the beads like this, chant like that, and Haribo. Any questions like that? No, great. Okay, move on to the next guy. That would be best, right? You just go ahead and You know, and then the problem is, you know, there's so many people walking by, you can only explain all this to so many people a day, you know, like that. And they're all walking by, going to work, you know, and so then, you know, you have a limited time and then out of work, you know, so you catch a few more, you know, and then, you understand. Yeah. So it's because others, they can't discern. So there's the, if it's dealt on the intellectual platform, then it's you can't discern what is right. You can't either distinguish what is the point, I don't see the difference, or you see the difference, you can't tell which is right or wrong. Because that seems right, this also seems right. Right? But a doubt means there's no, that can't be right. You know, and that's more of what we call a misgiving. So misgiving is no, it can't be right, because there's an emotional aspect. So that's the problem. Like we were talking before, with children you'll get doubts, you won't get misgivings. Adults you get misgivings. So when we say issues means misgiving. Issue doesn't mean doubt. Because issue is not an intellectual point. Right? People die over issues. Right? People don't die over intellectual points. Is that what he says? Yeah. Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami gives a preliminary answer in verses 4 to 12 by giving an analysis of the three modes of nature, and then continues to answer these questions by telling the story of when Maharaj Yudhishthira asked related questions to Narad Muni at the Rajasuya sacrifice after witnessing Shishupal merging into the body of Sri Krishna. Right? So this doubt comes up. So this is the discussion. That will then refer to the same discussion with Maharaj Yudhishthira. But that will be then a discussion of Prahlad Maharaj. Right? So that's how all these things are going. The Vidura wants to know more about the creation, all these, you could say, apara vidya, but connected to Krishna. And so then he refers to other discussions. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So like that. Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Narad Muni question 7.2 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1, 16 to 21. Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired, "It is very wonderful that the demon Shishupal merged into the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though extremely envious. This Sayujya Mukti is impossible to attain even for great transcendentalists. How then did the enemy of the Lord attain it? O great sage, we are eager to know the cause for this mercy of the Lord. I have heard that formerly a king named Vena blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that all the Brahmanas consequently obliged him to go to hell. Shishupal should also have been sent to hell. How then did he merge into the Lord's existence? How was it possible for Shishupal and Dantavakra, in the presence of many exalted persons, to enter very easily into the body of Krishna, whose nature is difficult to attain? This matter is undoubtedly very wonderful. Indeed, my intelligence has become disturbed, just as the flame of a candle is disturbed by a blowing wind. O Narad Muni, you know everything. Kindly let me know the cause of this wonderful event." Right. So now his doubt's coming up from the other side, right? Because the one is coming up that we see that he's always favoring. We say he's equal, but he's favoring the devotees and killing the demons. And here, then, it's about, if he's equal to everyone, why is it all these great personalities and transcendentalists can't merge into the Lord, and this demon is? How is he equal? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that rasa is the common point. How they relate, because they're relating to him, that's then how he reciprocates. Right? Does that make sense? The Mayavadis can't, because they're not relating to Krishna. But Shishupal, Dantavakra, they're totally into Krishna. Right? So is it? Yeah. Yes?
Can we say that on the platform of Tattva, the Lord is equal, and then on the platform of Vasa, he becomes yours?
The point is, on one level you could say that, but the point is in Rasa, he reciprocates how you surrender. So that is an equal. He's differentiating that there is difference of surrender, so he's reciprocating. But the point is as how you're, the equal is between you and the Lord on that platform. In rasa, it's that how much you're surrendered is how much he's reciprocating. Right? And in tattva, you can say, yes, he's dealing with everybody according to their position and this and that. Basically, it's the same. But there's a slight difference. Does that make sense? I'm sure in Sanskrit there's all kinds of nice terms to explain these subtle differences. Unfortunately, we don't have in English. Narada Muni answers these questions from verse 23 to 33. Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Narada Muni question 7-3 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 7-3. It's from Bhagavatam 7.1.34-35. Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired, what kind of great curse could affect even liberated Vishnu Bhaktas? And what sort of person could curse the Lord's associates? For unflinching devotees of the Lord to fall again into this material world is impossible. I cannot believe this. The bodies of the inhabitants of Vaikuntha are completely spiritual, having nothing to do with the material body, senses, or life air. Therefore, kindly explain how associates of the personality of Godhead were cursed to descend in material bodies like ordinary persons. Narada Muni answers these questions from verse 36 to 47. Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Narada Muni question 7-4 of Srimad Bhagavatam. 7-1-48. Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired, O my Lord, Narada Muni, why was there such enmity between Hiranyakashipu and his beloved son Prahlad Maharaj? How did Prahlad Maharaj become such a great devotee of Lord Krishna? Kindly explain this to me. Narada Muni answers these questions in the next several chapters. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the first chapter, Sukadev dispels doubts about partiality in Vishnu and briefly states the story of the three births of Jayendijaya. Right? So he's first clearing the doubt of impartiality. That being cleared, then naturally the questions move on to how he's interacting with Prahlad Maharaj and the Shingadev and Hiranyakashipu. That story all comes up. In this chapter, in response to a question by Maharaj Parikit, Sukadeva Goswami gives his conclusions concerning how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although the Supersoul, friend and protector of everyone, killed the Daityas, the demons, for the sake of Indra, the King of Heaven. In his statements, he totally refutes the arguments of people in general who accuse the Supreme Lord of partiality. Sukadeva Goswami proves that because the body of the conditioned soul is infected by the three qualities of nature, dualities arise such as enmity and friendship, attachment and detachment, right? Because we'll say, this is favorable, this is not favorable, right? But since the Lord doesn't have this, then those qualities won't come up. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, there is no such dualities. Even eternal time cannot control the activities of the Lord. Eternal time is created by the Lord and it acts under his control. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore, is always transcendental to the influence of the three modes of nature, Maya, the Lord's external energy, which acts in creation and annihilation. Thus, all the demons killed by the Supreme Lord attain salvation immediately. The second question raised by Parikit Maharaj concerns how Shishupal, although inimical towards Krishna from his very childhood, always blaspheming Krishna, attained salvation in oneness when Krishna killed him. Sukadeva Goswami explains that because of their offenses at the feet of devotees, two attendants of the Lord in Vaikuntha named Jaya and Vijaya became Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha in Satya Yuga, Ravana and Kumbhakarna in the next Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Shishupal and Dantavaka at the end of Dwapara Yuga. Because of their fruitive acts, Jaya and Vijaya agreed to become the Lord's enemies. And when killed in that mentality, they attained salvation and oneness. Thus, even if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in envy, he attains salvation. What then is to be said of devotees who always engage in the Lord's service with love and faith? Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses 1 to 15. The Lord is always transcendental to material qualities. 16 to 32. Liberation through enmity. 34 to 48. The Vaikuntha gatekeepers get cursed. Verses 1 to 15. In verses 1 to 15, Sukadeva Goswami explains that the Lord does not have a material body to be subjected to attachment and hatred. Therefore, he is always transcendental to the influence of time and the modes of nature. Right? Because we have the material body, we have the conditioning, Therefore, we're subject to the control of time and the modes of nature. Why mention both of them? The modes of nature is the qualities with which one works, and time means work. Right? It means you get a result that has to be done by an activity. Activity is controlled by time. What activity you'll do, what's the attitude, what you'll choose, what ingredients, that will be the modes of nature. Does that make sense? Yes.
I was just going to point out, it's interesting how in the seventh canto, this is the first appearance of one of the three special categories of the Lord. I think it's Paratattva, Trinity, and Chandra, and Krishna.
Okay.
This is the main argument in Tattvasambhava for why Krishna is supreme, is comparing to the Trinity.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, within.
But we haven't seen it so far in the Bhagavatam. It's been the pastimes of other incarnations.
But it's interesting also, then, that's another natural division of the cantos, is that in the first six cantos, all swamsa.
Yeah.
And in the second six, then you're getting the paravastu.
Yeah,
like that, because he's saying is that here is that, is he's pointing out is that here you'll see is that that we're dealing now starting with paravastu. Means Nisringadeva, then an eighth canto, I think, is Ramachandra, and then a ninth canto is introduced Krishna, and then we'll go into the pastimes. Right? Just at the very end of ninth canto, I think. It just shows the dynasty, and then it goes into there, so tenth canto. But it shows that how they're dealing. Then Nisringadeva deals, and then Ramachandra deals. So Nisringadeva kills them all. Then they take birth in Ramachandra's pastimes. Then he kills them all. Then they take birth in Krishna's pastimes. But with Krishna, they're liberated.
Yeah.
So actually, Krishna is the superior of all the Paravasta. Yeah. Right? That's, he was quoting that from Tattvasambhava. Like that.
Sorry.
Huh?
Lagu
Bhagavatam. Yeah. Yes. Okay? Yes. Okay? Okay. Unmanifest. You attain perfection. No, I'm just saying here. Yes, he's attained the transcendental position. Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur introduces the topic as follows. In the previous canto, it was said that Diti, whose two sons had been killed by Vishnu after he was instigated by Indra, burned with anger, inflamed by lamentation. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.18.23. Parikit, as if not tolerating partiality of Vishnu in favoring Indra, but actually understanding the truth, desired to relish the nectar of the conclusion from the mouth of Sukadeva. Right? Because it's been said, and it's going to say, but the point is relishing him saying it directly, right, explaining it, that's the whole point. Then you get the very clear vision. That's the whole point, as we see, is here he's calling him the eye of the universe, because in here then very clearly the conclusions are given. Right? Therefore he asks the question of 3:1-3. The Lord is equal, how can he show partiality? If he's affectionate to all living beings, to all beings, why is the Lord not affectionate to the demons? He is the friend of all beings, why is he not friendly to the demons? Right? So it's natural it'll come up, because Diti's gotten upset. Right? And as a Kshatriya, you know, you always have to protect the ladies. Now Diti is upset, so then why is she upset? So why is Krishna acting this way? He understands, but he wants to hear it again, how nicely it's been explained. Does that make sense? King Parikit inquired, my dear Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, is equal and extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial like a common man for the sake of Indra, and thus kill Indra's enemies? How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical towards others? Verse 1, Srila Prabhupada comments. In Bhagavad Gita 9.29, the Lord says, Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshyosti na priha. I am equal to everyone. No one is dear to me, nor is anyone my enemy. In the previous canta, however, it has been observed that the Lord sided with Indra by killing the demons on his account. Hata pura diti shakra parshni grahena vishnuna. Therefore, the Lord was clearly partial to Indra, although he is the super soul in everyone's heart. The soul is extremely dear to everyone. And similarly, the supersoul is also dear to everyone. Thus, there cannot be any faulty action on the part of the supersoul. The soul is also always kind to all living entities, irrespective of form and situation. Yet he took the side of Indra just like an ordinary friend. This was the subject of Maharaj Purikhita's inquiry. As a devotee of Lord Krishna, he knew very well that Krishna cannot be partial to anyone. But when he saw that Krishna acted as the enemy of the demons, he was somewhat doubtful. Therefore, he posed this question to Sukadeva Goswami for a clear answer. Right? Because he knows it, but it's coming out, it's not appearing that way. So please explain it so that it comes, right? Because the idea is we hear Shabda, that's the authority. But it should come down into the activities and down into the knowledge itself. That then we say is realization. Right? Does that make sense? So that was before what we said is the doubt then will be, is that, okay, the point makes sense, but when we apply it into particular qualities or particular mechanics, then we see some difference. I can't discern that. I can't discern how this creates it or how this activity or how this knowledge gains this results or why another one doesn't. Like, I remember one doubt coming up in a 5-year-old's mind is that you have ketchup. You put that in your mouth, you get no bubbles, right? But you have toothpaste, which is red. You put that in your mouth, you get bubbles. Why doesn't ketchup make bubbles? Right? Very logical, right? So this is a doubt, right? You know. Okay. So we want to bring it down. So he's seeing this not happening here. But a misgiving is you don't want to bring it down. Because certain mechanics, certain moods, that you already have a preconceived idea of what effects they'll get. So even though they could get this effect that's being mentioned, you don't want it to get that effect. Does that make sense? Like that. You know, so it's just like an example comes up. May not be a pleasant one, but a certain ethnic group was loaded onto trains and transported over to certain cities within Poland. Then getting off the trains, then they go into the various camps. You have 1, 2, and 3. Right? And so then going into, then depending upon who you are, if you could work and all that, since work will set you free, then those who could work, then they will, by their work, be set free. By those who can't work, then they will be set free by assistance. Okay? So, you have the group that will be set free by assistance. And you have an elderly gentleman. And he's there. And one of the local German hosts, you know, a female is walking by in her, you know. But, you know, because of the attitude, she slips. And so this one ethnic gentleman catches her and asks if she's okay. She gets really angry because this particular ethnic group is all bad. How can they be nice? This is a misgiving. Does that make sense? Yeah, so even though here's facts to show something different, the mind won't accept it because there's already a preconceived idea. In other words, one is mechanically applying it, there's a doubt because they don't see how it works. Oh no. Or you've had some other experience, but you know, you're open to it. But misgiving is you've already have a preconceived idea, this is the way it is. Therefore, it can't be any other way. Yes, the mind's closed. Like that. And because that comes with time and experience and maturity, it will be thought of as something mature. Therefore, then you get a room full of such persons together, and in this way they can go around conquering the world because everybody else is savages. Right? You know, it's just the way it works. Yeah? So that's the problem, is these preconceived ideas, that will be the problem that we're dealing with. So that would be more of either the doubt is light or the doubt is strong. So you'll generally see if the doubt's coming up from misgiving, it will be a stronger, therefore it will come up generally as its own separate entity, right, in the Panchanga Nyaya. right? But if it's just a doubt coming up that there's some fine points, then it may come up as a separate thing, as we see here Pirkit Mars is bringing up, or it may just be included in the discussion and be dealt with in the examples. Does that make sense? Right. We're just putting a little extra effort into this sense. How you say it, we're going to be spending some months doing this, you know, a lot. Right. Actually, it's going to continue, right? Because then Tattva Sundarbha will do the same thing. Mm-hmm. It'll just have a little bit more, how you say, body to it. It won't be so succinct, but it'll be the same. Okay, no, we'll break now for a few minutes, and then we'll come back. So, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yes, because the normal thing would be, I mean, oh, that was the other idea of doing it, so we have two different topics.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, it's amazing.
You overtook the place, now I'm the guest.
There was a rumor around about, Okay. In his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 134, Srila Jiva Goswami clarifies that taking the side of the demigods in the mundane affairs of the universe does not actually constitute the Lord's real mercy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not give his real mercy to the demigods and others still under the spell of the three modes of material nature. He gives his real mercy only to the great souls, such as Prahlad, who are free from the spell of the modes. By associating with such devotees, one also becomes free from the spell of the three modes of nature. When one has thus shaken off the influence of the modes, he can engage in real devotional service. So here's being made a distinction that when the Lord takes care of mundane situations, that's mercy of the Lord. The Lord has put in his attention, he's reciprocated and everything. But it's not the real mercy, right? The real mercy is pure devotional service. Right? That's the actual. So that he kills the demons, then that is a mercy, that he's taking care, because the demigods are doing service for the Lord, so therefore they want to take care of that. He's protecting them. But the real mercy is when you get faith in devotional service. So that it comes by the association of devotees, yes.
Can you say there is a gradation of mercy? The first one would be the demons, they got killed. The second one would be the demigods, they get this protection.
Right.
And the real mercy would be the devotees.
Yes, you can say. So it's just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about the really real thing, the vastava-vastu, right? And so that means is that you're getting actual devotional service. It means the primary aspect. So in other words, the Lord is giving mercy on the secondary to the demigods, you know, or to the demons, but the real mercy is coming by what he's giving to the pure devotees. Does that make sense? So it's not that, yes.
If you go beyond that, the real mercy is the suffering that the topmost devotees experience.
Yes. Yeah, that goes the other way, right? Yeah. The separation in Vrindavan, yeah. So that's considered the highest there, but down here that's considered the lowest. Yeah, very nice. Okay. Pirkit Maharaj continued, Lord Vishnu himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a reservoir of all pleasure. Therefore, what benefit would he derive from siding with the demigods? What interest would he fulfill in this way? Since the Lord is transcendental, why should he fear the asuras, and how could he be envious of them? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. One cannot say that the Lord will derive happiness from the demigods, the devatas, and thus side with them. He has a sarup of the highest bliss. Nothing else can produce happiness in him. And one cannot say that the disturbance of the demons make him suffer, and that thus he hates them. He has no anxiety from demigods, demons, and no hatred of them, because he is beyond the gunas. Right? So this is the important point. We say he's beyond the gunas, because there's nothing to gain from the demigods and there's nothing to lose from the demons. So it's just a matter of what is actually the universal order and how someone reciprocates with them. The demons are doing what they do by opposing the laws of nature. The demigods are trying to support the laws of nature. So naturally he reciprocates with them. So the laws of nature means things will come back into its natural order. So therefore the demigods get removed. The demigods are supported, the demons are removed. That's the basic thing that happens. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada adds, we should always remember the distinction between spiritual and material. That which is material is affected by material qualities, but these qualities cannot touch that which is spiritual or transcendental. Krishna is absolute, whether he is in the material world or spiritual world. When we see partiality in Krishna, this vision is due to his external energy. Otherwise, how could his enemies attain salvation after being killed by him? Everyone who deals with the Supreme Personality of Godhead gradually acquires the qualities of the Lord. The more one advances in spiritual consciousness, the less he is affected by the duality of material qualities. The Supreme Lord, therefore, must certainly be freed from these qualities. His enmity and friendship are external features presented by the material energy. He is always transcendental. He is absolute, whether he kills or bestows his favor. Right? So the benefit is the same. But it's depending upon how they're dealing, that's the medium he's using to reciprocate. So they fight with him, he fights back. Naturally, he wins. Right? They're supportive of him, then he supports them. That's why it's said that the real mercy is not gained here, that we say, oh, this is mercy because we get it from the material vision. But because it's connected to the Lord, it is mercy. But at the same time, as the real mercy is a relationship with him and devotion. Right? That's the... Envy and friendship arise in one who is imperfect. We fear our enemies because in the material world we are always in need of help. The Lord, however, does not need anyone's help, for he is Atmarama. Right? So here. We fear enemies because we need help. We need to be taken care of. We're actually, not independent. So therefore, enemies will create problem, right? Because enemies will come, they'll create difficulty for us, so we need help to... get rid of the enemies. So Indra, they're fearful of the demons, so they get Vishnu to support them. But Krishna being independent, no one can bother him. So he's beyond. So it's only because they've approached, the demigods have approached, the demons haven't. Right? So therefore then he's siding with them. The Balimars approached the Lord, therefore he's siding with him. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:26, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya parayachati tadaham bhaktya upahritam asnami prayatatmanaha. If a devotee offers me with devotion a little leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I shall accept it. Why does the Lord say this? He is dependent on the offering. Is he dependent on the offering of the devotee? He is not actually dependent, but he likes to be dependent upon his devotee. This is his mercy. Similarly, he does not fear the asuras. Thus, there is no question of partiality in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So it's a matter of what he likes. Right? He does things in a certain way. Right? So if the spiritual world is about Krishna, the activities and situations in the spiritual world are about Krishna. Those are reflected here in the material world. Therefore, those recommended by Shastra of activities and situations and results, those are because naturally they're for Krishna. But depending upon your perspective of karma and jnana, you can take those as ways to elevate yourself to a better material facility or a ways to get yourself out of the material world. Right? For liberation. But actually that's not what they're meant for. They're meant for pleasing the Lord. So that the Lord is doing things that please him, that's natural. And so then the devotee does that. So it's a matter of reciprocation there. He's independent, he doesn't require. But because of relationship, therefore then he interacts. Maharaj Parikit continued. O greatly fortunate and learned Brahmana, whether Narayana is partial or impartial has become a subject of great doubt. Kindly dispel my doubt with positive evidence that Narayana is always neutral and equal to everyone. Srila Prabhupada explains, right? Because if you give positive evidence, then it's showing exactly, not just negative evidence, just showing that he's an idiot for asking such a question. Right? So it's positive, right? Srila Prabhupada explains, Since Lord Narayana's absolute, his transcendental qualities are described as one. Thus, his punishments and his offerings of favor are both of the same value. Essentially, his inimical actions are not displays of enmity towards his so-called enemies. But in the material world, one thinks that Krishna is favorable to devotees and unfavorable to non-devotees. When Krishna finally instructs in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, Bhagavad Gita 18:66. This is meant not only for Arjuna, but for every living entity within this universe. Yeah. So, since he's absolute, whatever he does will be on the absolute platform. The living entity gets absolute benefit. Whether they appreciate that benefit or not, that will come from the material vision. So we'll think, oh, this is not good, this is good, that comes from the material vision. But in actuality, if it's connected to Krishna, it's always good. It's just a matter of more good. Right? So getting material benefits in karma, getting material benefits in jnana and liberation, they're benefits by the Lord. But more than that will be the devotion. Right? That's why the Sarva Dharmam Parityaja. Because you're dealing with a religion when you're dealing with karma and jnana. Karma is the religion of the elements that you're dealing with. How they'll be favorable, so it will create a favorable environment. Right? Jnana is how you're dealing with the soul, so that it's naturally in its position. Right? In its liberated position. But both of those are seen as mundane because where's the connection to Krishna? One has material facility, okay. Or one's liberated, okay. Where's the connection to Krishna? When it's connected to Krishna, then it takes on its original form in bhakti, where everyone on the spiritual platform, all activities are engaged in Krishna's service. Right? So there's no distinction made there between karma and jnana. It's only made here because of mundane, there's two different tastes. Does that make sense? Yeah. The great sage Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, you have put before me an excellent question. Discourses concerning the activities of the Lord in which the glories of his devotees are also found are extremely pleasing to devotees. Such wonderful topics always counteract the miseries of the materialistic way of life. Therefore, great sages like Narada always speak upon Srimad Bhagavatam because it gives one the facility to hear and chant about the wonderful activities of the Lord. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasadeva and then begin describing topics concerning the activities of Lord Hari." Srila Prabhupada 4 and 5. Srila Prabhupada comments, "Whenever there is an opportunity to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord, we must take it. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends Kirtaniya Sadahari, Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila 17:31. One should always engage in Krishna Katha by chanting and talking about Krishna and hearing about him. That is the only occupation of a Krishna conscious person." Right? So he says that's the only occupation, to hear and chant about the glories of the Lord. So therefore, we're always engaged in that. And then naturally, that's the body then also becomes engaged. Right, because whatever you talk about, that's what the body does. Right, kids sit around talking about video games. What do they do all day? Play video games. Right, so it naturally goes. So all these others are simply activities to engage the body. Right, does that make sense? So that's it. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is always transcendental to material qualities, and therefore he is called Nirguna, or without qualities. Because he is unborn, he does not have a material body to be subjected to attachment and hatred. Although the Lord is always above material existence, through his spiritual potency, he appeared and acted like an ordinary human being, accepting duties and obligations, apparently like a conditioned soul. Srila Prabhupada comments.
Yes.
No, no. Yes, but where it means in the spiritual world there won't be an... Yes. In the majesty you won't really see it like that. Only in sweetness then there'll be some aspects of... Because you're dealing... and even then it's only occasional, just for flavor. Amongst the gopis there may be some jealousy. But there's never envy. They're never trying to destroy the others or... You know, all it is that they're jealous that, okay, those gopis have made nice arrangements for Krishna, we'll make nicer arrangements. Right? And having made the nicer arrangements than the first group would say, oh, they made nicer than us, we'll make even nicer than that. So like that it goes on. So there, even the seeming quality of jealousy, it creates a environment of service to the Lord. So it's never a problem like that. It's only the material then will say, this one's my enemy and this and that. All it is they're doing service. We want to do that service. Therefore, we have to do it nicer than they're doing it. You understand? So they're not technically an enemy. Well, here then we develop that thing of friends and enemies. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because of our material conditioning. Because we're dependent. So being dependent upon the material energy, therefore we have friends and enemies. But if we're liberated, we don't have such a thing. What does it matter? You know? I mean, Jarabhart, he's a liberated soul, but he's carrying the palanquin. He's not complaining. And after the king makes all kinds of comments that are actually not very important, then he explains the real position of those comments. But either explains them how it's the other opposite of that, or explains the same point in connection with Krishna consciousness. Then he says, having heard all this, if you still identify as the king and me as a servant, then tell me what to do. I'll try to do my best. You know, but in reality, you know, neither are you the master or am I the servant. Does that make sense?
Can we say that this would be on the ground of Yudhaka?
Yes. But it's the point is self-realization is actually a natural part of Krishna consciousness. It's just not the prominent part. So in other words, in the secondary, you're going to have the liberated position and the activities of Krishna consciousness. Right? But on the primary, it's going to be that the affection for Krishna. Right? Because I'm going to perform an activity, it's going to get a result. But it's about the affection for Krishna that makes the primary. Is that in a sense? You know, so that's the dynamic that's always going on. Is that make sense? There's an interest to serve, there's affection for Krishna, so there's an inspiration to serve Krishna. Right? It means that there's the sthaibhava. But then with vibhava, there's an inspiration. Right? So that's prajumna. Right, so therefore an activity will be performed. But what activity will be performed, that will be based on knowledge. That will be sankarshan. Right, so therefore, for this situation, with this knowledge, what's the best activity performed to get the best results for Krishna? Right? But so that's combined with the attitude to want to please Krishna. Right? So you want to please Krishna with affection. But you're going to express that through a secondary form that comes from the knowledge. Does that make sense? Right. So that combined in Vasudeva means then you'll perform the activity engaging the senses with that proper knowledge and attitude, you know, to get that result to please Krishna. Right? So they all come together. So Sankarshan is the knowledge, you know. In Vasudeva, that Sankarshan will be represented as the proper technical activity. which will give, therefore, in Prayojana, or not rooted the actual technical result. Right? But with Prajumna, the attitude, then that is the attitude to please Krishna, you know, in devotion. Therefore, the attitude of endeavor is to please Krishna. So then you get a result that both has a form to express it, and it has the attitude. You understand? Because I've used technique and added proper attitude properly, right? Then I get a result of a proper result with proper attitude. Does that make sense? So it all works together. So this idea, oh, we can do anything. That's these impersonal things, jato mat tato pat. Whatever you do, it all ends up as the same thing, but it's not. You cook potatoes, you end up with potatoes. You don't end up with asparagus or something. Right? You know, it just doesn't change. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
From the point of enmity, that enmity is caused by opposing worldviews, while competition, people may have the competition is there, people share a common view, and they compete who can express it better, but enmity, there has to be opposing worldview, just therefore the demigods and the demons are always inimical to each other because they have opposing worldviews.
Okay.
In future world, there is no opposing views, absolutely everybody has the same worldview.
Because it's within rasa, who's going to perform the activity better. Okay. We're on Sukadev Goswami continue? Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is always transcendental to material qualities, and therefore he's called Nirguna, or without qualities. Because he is unborn, he does not have a material body to be subjected to attachment and hatred. Although the Lord is always above material existence, through his spiritual potency, he appeared and acted like an ordinary human being, accepting duties and obligations, apparently like a conditioned soul. Right, so in the spiritual world, he does these things for his own pleasure. So when he does it here, it simply appears that he's behaving like an ordinary person. No, he's just behaving like he does in the spiritual world. But here we'll consider those duties are like that ordinary person. Right? In the spiritual world, they do duties because that's nice. That's the way to express their affection for Krishna and how Krishna interacts with them. In the material world, we only do duties because it will get results. And once we have the results, we may or may not perform our duties. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it appears that it's ordinary. Srila Prabhupada comments, so-called attachment, detachment, and obligations pertain to the material nature, which is an emanation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But whenever the Lord descends and acts in this material world, he does so in his spiritual position. Although his activities materially appear different, spiritually they are absolute and non-different. Thus, it is an imposition upon the Supreme Lord to say that he is envious of anyone or friendly to anyone. So here we're doing, because there's a difference between the living entity and the body. Therefore, the activities they perform with the body is actually a duality, right? Because they're not the same as the soul. While Krishna is the same. He's performing an activity. It's his nature. So therefore, there's no duality there. Therefore, how will there be friends or enemies? It's simply on what is favorable in this situation or what's not. That's all. It's not actually about friends and enemies. But for us, because we're dependent upon the body, dependent upon the material energy, then we will see this is getting in the way of me becoming the Supreme, and this is favorable for me becoming the Supreme. Right? But he's already the Supreme, so he doesn't have that problem. When one can properly understand the truth, one becomes devoted and nirguna, free from material qualities. Simply by understanding the activities of Krishna, one can become transcendental. And as soon as one is transcendental, he is fit to be transferred to the spiritual world. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in his Paramatma Sandarbha Anuchedas 99 and 100. It only appears that the Lord's pastimes are in accordance with the modes, but actually it is not true. Why? In Srimad Bhagavatam 717, it mentions that when time for the mode of goodness to be prominent, the Lord himself will infuse his potency within the demigods and sages and make them prominent. He coordinates in that way. When his time for passion become prominent, he puts potency in the demons and makes them powerful. And when his time for ignorance prominence, he infuses power into yakshas and rakshasas to give them prominence. Thus, time acts according to the will of the Lord, not the Lord acting according to time's will. Time is the energy of the Lord. It sees the will of the Lord and acts accordingly. Right? So according to what is there, then time factor, that's why Prabhupada says, we'll see that in the 11th canto, where then he then defines that time, sometimes we see the demigods are prominent, sometimes we see the demons are prominent. So naturally it's the world order or universal order that the demigods are prominent. But by time, then sometimes they're not. So it's just that time factor then infuses the one thing here then or there. So then the activity, because the activity has to be performed with time. Then it being performed with passion, it comes out, the demons are prominent. It's part of the goodness, the demigods are prominent. So then it's just a matter of what prominence is there. So when the devotional culture is there, the transcendental is prominent. When it's following the traditions of the Vedic culture, the mode of goodness will be prominent. When one can't tell the difference whether, oh, this is right or that's wrong, do we follow the modern, do we follow the Vedic, that's the mode of passion. And when we're opposed to the Vedic, then that would be the mode of ignorance. Right? So these things will just come up depending upon what the prominence is. So it's just time factor. So whichever one comes up, one doesn't have to worry. That's the point in 11th canto. With time, it'll change anyway because time is always changing. Right? So whatever is prominent now with time will change, so you don't have to worry that, oh, it's going to be like this forever. No, it's never like this forever. Right? Yeah. Now the explanation of the verse. When the Lord wants goodness prominent, he will help the sages and he will enthuse them through goodness and make them prominent, although along with knowledge, study of the Vedic literature. Thus everyone becomes favorable to knowledge and wants to study, and no one is against Vedic knowledge. These are the people who help the Lord perform his pastimes at that time. In the same way, when passion becomes prominent, the Lord enters the asuras through passion and makes them powerful, and they start troubling the sages by creating havoc. When it's time for tamaguna, he enters into the yakshas, rakshasas, etc., and makes them prominent through the mode of ignorance. Here someone may ask, right? So here is, you're putting up the doubt, not someone else's making it out. So it's in your explanation is coming up, right? Does that make sense? So this is another, the other form of bringing up doubt. It's just technically someone could have this doubt, so you're bringing it up. It is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in the mode of pure goodness. Is this goodness not material, one of the material modes of nature? When and where does the Lord manifest his great transcendental power? Why does the Lord sometimes kill the demons and sometimes not kill them? Fearing that someone may ask these questions, Srila Sukadeva Goswami gives an answer in the next two verses. Right? So here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives an insight into Sukadeva Goswami, how he's seeing, because as he's explaining, he's thinking, oh, this doubt may come up, this may come up. So then he explains it in the verse. Yes. Meaning? I didn't catch the first part of the sentence. That's here with him personally. It means he's manifesting that, but the point is through the agency of the modes of nature and time, then he's influencing. Because he says through his energy. Right? He will help, and he will enthuse them through goodness and make them prominent. But so it's through his energy that he'll do that. But he, as Paramatma, just sits and watches, because he's in transcendental. He's in pure goodness. So we're interested in particular ways things unfold, the way particular things manifest. Therefore, then he influences the modes, and then they become prominent. And so then at some point this comes up, sometimes that comes up. So that's why you see sometimes the demigods are prominent, sometimes the demons are prominent, sometimes the yakshas, rakshasas are prominent. Yeah, yeah, like this. So, you know, it's always changing. But he's just watching as an observer. But it's through his energy, so it's by his will that this is going on. Right? In other words, things would just go on in its static state, but because the living entity has desire, therefore it's happening. That's why, that's from that aspect you can say the living entity is Purusha, or the enjoyer, because it's because of them they have the body and all these different things happen. But that the body is there, it functions, that these things happening is because of the Lord's potency, the Lord's will. In other words, the Lord wills to fulfill the desires of the living entity. Right? But in such a way to bring them back to Godhead. Right? And you're wondering, oh, okay, if the Lord wants to fulfill the desire, why isn't everything going great for me? The problem is everybody else wants the same thing. You know, why aren't I the temple president? Because everybody else wants to be the temple president too. You know, so by the modes of nature, then this one comes up, then that one, and then it just happens like that. So unless one is situated that's about devotional service, that can be stable. That can be sustained. Does that make sense? Because it's about devotional service, that's why Prabhupada didn't like the changing of administrative positions so much. Right? It means like GBC or GBC for life. Because it's about devotional service. It's about, it's a, you understand, like that. But there wasn't any rule like that about presidents. You understand? But he didn't like presidents changing just because someone else wanted to be the president. Point is, he's there, he's doing a great job, then go open a new temple. You want to be president? Open a new temple. You understand? Like that. So it's point is, it's going on. You don't need to, there's no need of that kind of competition. Right? So. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King Parikit, the material qualities, sattvagun, rajagun, and tamagun, all belong to the material world and do not even touch the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These three gunas cannot act by increasing or decreasing. Cannot act by increasing or decreasing simultaneously." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. "In his Swarup, the Lord is at all times equal. This answers the question, when and where does the Lord manifest his great transcendental power? The gunas belong to Prakriti and do not influence the Lord. This means that though Prakriti is his Shakti, it does not arise from his Swarup." Right? So, in other words, the external energy is not rising from his Swarup. Right? Because he only acts under the internal potency. Right? So this is an expansion or reflection of the internal potency. So in other words, he deals with internal potency. Internal potency expands as external potency. So it's his potency, and he's in control because he's in control of his internal potency. And internal potency controls the external. Does that make sense? So that still puts him as transcendental. This is the biggest problem people have when they actually try to get technical in philosophy, is how the Lord is involved, but at the same time, things are going wrong. Right? So therefore, for the impersonalist, then he can't be involved because it's all Brahman, so therefore any form and activities is already mundane anyway. So therefore we try to give it up. For those who are karmis, then, well, the Lord, you know, he did his best and he gave it his best shot, and, you know, it came out fairly good, but, you know, actually, as we humans have to make it better, right? I think that's deism. Right, that the deity has created, but actually the perfection of it comes from the humankind. Therefore, we make our endeavors very nicely. You know, I think Hamilton was a very prominent person in this, and he's the one I think that was prominent in establishing the Reserve Bank in America. You know, the whole thing, right? So the whole point is this: he was using in an economic point of view. So that's the thing. We'll attain perfection through economic perfection. Does that make sense? Like that. But Washington was through administrative perfection. Yes? So that's the difficulty, is they think that it'll come from here. But for Krishna, he's transcendental to this. So the deist will say God made his endeavor and now he's not involved. That's the only way that they can. In other words, the deist means he has faith in God, but he can't reconcile about how God is good and the material world is not so good. Does that make sense? Yes?
Transcendent.
Imminent, yes. But the point is he is imminent because he's pervading everything. That's how it all works. But that's the point is his external energy is doing that through the modes of nature and time. That's being controlled by his internal potency, which is being controlled by him. So therefore, he is transcendental and immanent. He's both. He's all-pervading, and he's transcendental. So therefore, they can get one of the... He's transcendental, but not all-pervading. He's all-pervading, he's not, you know... So it's just... That's the problem. So this clears all the doubts, because that's why he's bringing this point out. It does not arise from his sarup. If you can understand that... Then it can be understood. Right? Okay. Footnote 1. In other words, the Lord is never transformed. However, his achintya shakti becomes transformed as the living entities and the material world. This conclusion is called shakti parinamavad and is accepted by the Vaishnavas. Right? So in other words, the energy transforms. So this his sarup shakti, not his sarup, or the achintya shakti, expands as living entities, expands as the material world, expands as all the mechanics that makes the whole thing work. And so therefore, that's where it functions. Spiritual world, then now there, the internal potency is working, that's then non-different from Krishna. Because it's simply his desire that's directly being taken care of. But in the other one, it's not direct. It's indirect. He wants to see the living entities come back to Godhead. How are they going to come back to Godhead? By, at one point, becoming so frustrated that things don't work here, and I want to be. So, in other words, I want to be happy eternally. Why can't I do that? So that doubt, then you can then bring up, then Krishna consciousness, the philosophy that material world's temporary and it's a place of misery. That's why you can't be happy eternally. Then one will start to change from that. So, therefore, the living entity, since the end game is material misery, but at the same time is it's about engaging in the Lord's service. Right? So what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with two different things. One is the consciousness. One is the activity. Right? So, therefore, in the spiritual world, you have spiritual consciousness, spiritual activity. Material world, you have material consciousness and the reflected spiritual activity here. So if you follow appropriately the spiritual culture properly, you get good material results. Right? So that's called piety, karma. You don't follow it, you get impiety and things fall apart. Does that make sense? Same time is because the living entity is transcendental or eternal. Therefore, you follow the path of detachment or renunciation, you become more freed from disturbance here. And you don't, you become more disturbed. And that'll be piety on that platform. So you have piety in karma and jnana, and you have impiety in karma and jnana. Sorry? Because there's plenty to disturb you. So because it means, in other words, the mode of goodness, they're attached to it being in the mode of goodness. And since the material world, especially nowadays, is designed basically in ignorance with a tinge of passion, therefore it's always going to be a disturbance. So if you're transcendental, therefore if it's nice or not nice, if it's ideal or not ideal, then you go on doing your service. That's what Prabhupada says. The rice threshing machine, whether it's in heaven or hell, does the same work. Right? So in other words, you're doing Harinam down the street and everyone's, you know, smiling and going Haribol and all that, you're doing it. But if you go into places where they're, you know, throwing bottles at you and this and that, you're still doing it. Right? You know, so that's the point. So if you're attached to the mode of goodness, no, there's spots to do that, we're doing the highest, you know, we're doing devotional service, and of that, the highest aspect, why are they, you know, they're demons, that you'll be disturbed. Point is they're demons. That's why you're going out on Harinam. Yeah, like that. Okay. So we'll stop here for now. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki. Jaya Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki. Jaya Nityananda Gaura Premananda ki.